Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Forever Bristol City podcast, and we're in a good mood today because the final score at Ashton Gate in front of 22,700 fans, not a bad effort considering Christmas is just around the corner. It finished City 1, Sunderland 0. I'm joined by Neil, Ian and Mark. Morning chaps, everybody feeling positive, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Feeling 10 out of 10.
That yesterday, feeling knackered off.
No, I mean, City's first win in five, and well, certainly the second half, it was a bit like the Alamo. As I always do, come to each of you just with your summary thoughts in no more than 30 seconds as you walked out of the ground or out of the bar or whatever. You first, Ian, what's your outtake from this?
3 points, clean sheet, played some good football in the first half. Second half was a bit like Rourke's Drift and we weren't the Zulus. But we should have beaten Norwich. We didn't. We lost the game. And we could have easily lost that or drew it yesterday. And we won it. So that just about sums up the championship. So let's win that. Let's try and win the game against Hull. And then we go into a very busy Christmas period with a very small squad.
Yeah, I think that's it. Small squad. We talk about the subs, which had a very attacking orientation to it, bar one, and the keeper, obviously. Mark, your thoughts as you walked away from the ground.
Sometimes you win games through great play, and sometimes it's through dogged defence. And yesterday, it was the latter. A great defensive display against the side City really want to be, who passed the ball with confidence, great triangles, two great wide players in Clark and Roberts, but no cutting edge. City did the work in the first half and had to defend for virtually the whole second half. My mouth was absolutely bone dry by the end of that. My nerves were shredded, but I came away feeling elated because we'd beaten a top six side. The previous two games have beaten West Brom and Leeds. So that was excellent. But there's lots of work to do coming up, but a great 3 points.
Yeah, absolutely what you say there. They've beaten West Brom and Leeds in their preceding two games. Away from home, not quite so good. I think it was 1-1, drawn 3, lost 3. But top six side, big support. And I know they were confident of getting something, but they weren't. Neil, your thoughts as you walked away from Ashton Gate?
Absolutely exhausted. I'd be put through the ringer that second half, following on from what Mark's saying. I think backs to the wall. The thing yesterday, we cut out the individual error, didn't we?
Yeah.
I can't think of a player that, you know, the stupid, nonsense, little errors that have crept in. We're resolute, determined. Max had one of those games that he can have from time to time where, you know, some of his saves, particularly second half, fantastic. And, yeah, I mean, we'll go through the stats, obviously, in due course. But ultimately, you know, there was a willingness to win there and to get over the line that was impressive from us. We threw our bodies on the line, literally. And, you know, we were determined. Yeah. And it was impressive from that regard.
Yeah. Ian, starting lineup, he made two changes. I think it was two. Leaving out Andy Vyman and Sam Bell. I welcomed the look of that side, really, to be honest. I know it's a little bit Hobson's choice or Manning's choice, really, at the moment. But were you surprised at those omissions? Or in Sam's case, we've been calling for him to have a rest. You know, it was overdue a little bit.
I think Mometi's earned his chance with some reasonable cameo performances. And he was very unlucky not to score. That was an excellent move where he cut in on his right foot. And he, you know, if that shot is 2 inches to the left, it's the inside of the post and goes in like a rocket. And that would have been great for the boys' confidence. So, no, I wasn't surprised. I welcomed Gardner Hickman back into the side in place of Joe, who did well when he came on. But the difference between the two teams, to be honest, was their technical skills. Their movement was superb. They've got some class players. I mean, Jack Clark and Roberts don't belong in the championship side, but perhaps they do because they haven't been able to do it at the very top level. But I was really impressed with their pace, their movement, their passing, their technical skills. And as Mark said, that is, I think, what Liam Manning would like to play like. Now, if he wants to play like that, he's going to need to bring in a few players because, with all due deference to him, our players haven't got those skills, or they certainly haven't got them yet. So, another point, excellent following from Sunderland. When you consider the distance and the proximity towards Christmas, I thought that was a tremendous following from him.
Yeah, good. Mark, Ian's just said about TGH coming back into the side. You look at the bench, I mean, it was, well, Williams, Cornick, Wyman Bell, Wells, Badgett, Knight the Bell, Yeboa. He's naming eight. Surely you might as well just stick a kid on to make it nine for experience if you've no intention of bringing him on, yeah?
Yeah, you could do, but you could also say, what difference is it going to make? And I think that's what it is at the end of the day. When you've got nine substitutes, I mean, I don't think there was going to be ever any intention of playing Naki Wells. And of course, bringing him on in that game later on would have been a mistake because of his defensive liabilities. He would have been expected to defend. We know he gives away a lot of fouls. Yeboa wouldn't come on, but Badgett, Knight the Bell, unless a defender's injured. So it doesn't really bother me. You know, I think seven subs is probably enough.
But yeah, I think
those were the two changes that I wanted. And I think we seemed close to a sort of a 4-4-2. It was certainly two banks of four that we played yesterday. But the other thing I'll go back to Ian said, I mean, the thing with Sunderland is every player wanted the ball. That's the difference. You know, players, you want the ball, pass and move. That's what you've got to do. You know, come into a space, go out of it. Make the other side work. That's what you've got to do, and that's what we need from our players if we're going to be a team like that. But I was just surprised that they didn't have any cutting edge, you know, for all of their possession, especially with Roberts in the first half when he, I mean, one where he beat Mometi, did Mometi and Pring on the right hand side, and he played it to the back post, and Clark, it was behind him. He just hit the ball so hard across. He couldn't get it out of his feet, but he would have had a tap in otherwise.
Yeah. Neil, I think we've done the lineup, but let's talk about one clash that was there. You know, we've all said George Tanner is possibly the weakest link. Hate to pick an individual player, but yesterday.
Hang on, I haven't said that.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm not saying you, but and a lot of people.
We all said.
Right. Yeah. We've. All right. All right. Ian, you haven't said, right? But he is. Right, and I think.
I don't think he is, Dave. No.
All right, well, I'm going to praise him because I'm going to say yesterday Tanner was up against one of the most highly rated players in the division in Jack Clark, right? And you didn't notice him. I expected something. Roberts was a standout player for me, particularly as Ian said. You did say that, Ian, didn't you? That he did that mazy run and put the cross into Clark on the back post.
No, I did.
You said it. There you go.
The one thing I'd say about Tanner, I'm not his biggest fan, I have to say, go on record. But the one thing I'll say about Tanner is it can't be easy for him being at that club in terms of the fact that he knows that he's not the first choice.
Yeah.
He's had two seasons now. Last season, we brought in Wilson to replace him.
Mm-hmm.
This season, we brought in McCrory to replace him. He knows that basically he's not going to be first choice. When McCrory's fit,
is
probably likely. I don't know what kind of player McCrory's going to be like. No. We've not seen him. No. Maybe he won't be a right back. Maybe he'll be a midfielder. Who knows the way we view McCrory. But Tanner knows that he's actually probably not our first choice at that. So he knows at some stage he's going to have to be replaced. But he gets his head down and he works and he gives 100%. And one thing you can say about Tanner is that he never gives less than 100% out there. He always plays to the maximum of his abilities. Yeah, there's a few times where there's a few errors and things that drive us mad, but he always plays, as I say, 100%. Yesterday, the way he played Clark yesterday, we spoke, didn't we, in W13, and I was like, oh, second half, Clark was. But the way they played on that shield, they made him come inside each time on the right, and either James or Knight, they just formed that block. They forced him inside on his right foot. The block was there every time. And to be fair, Clark didn't want to go outside him.
No.
There was a couple of times, I think, there was one time where he got outside him and Tanner did a really good, George did a very good tackle, well-timed tackle for a corner. But other than that, he never went outside him. So City really did their homework on Clark yesterday in relation to him. I think Roberts, as you say, has got a bit more to him.
Yeah.
I think a bit quicker with the ball.
He seems to have a low centre of gravity. He's sort of very difficult to knock off. Bounce. He looks like what Yeboah could become in the sense of that. Because he looked quite robust. I was surprised. I thought he was maybe South American or something like that. Because he was walking around players in a style that we're not used to.
Patricio Roberto.
Patricio.
But the, Clark was a little bit predictable in the way that he played. And I think that played to our advantage, actually, in the way in which we were able to put the block on him.
Okay. Let's get into the action. Ian, we don't normally talk about bookings, but two of our players were booked within 60 seconds of coming on, Tommy and Joe. Let's look at those two bookings. And let's pick, Ian, what did you think of the referee overall yesterday as well? Over to you.
I mean, considered it, I think he was fair. And I think he did a decent job in letting the game flow. He pretty much kept his cards in his pocket. I mean, the Tommy one, I was like most people, I was following the ball. So I didn't actually see the incident, but it looked like they actually ran into each other. I don't think it was, you know, so people said to me, well, that guy ran into Tommy. And I said, well, I didn't see it, to be honest. Now, Joe Williams went flying into that tackle within 30 seconds of coming on the field and caught the bloke. So, you know, that's what I call it a typical Joe Williams foul. And I can't say Tommy's booking was deserved because I didn't see it properly, but Joe's, from where I am, and it was on the other side of the pitch from me because I'm in the dolman, but it looked fair enough to me.
Mark,
on the referee, I think he gave us a penalty, which I think was right. The keeper caught Taylor Gardner-Hickman. And I think he might have turned down one for them and turned down one for us that I've seen given that type of thing previously. I mean, their defender wiped out Sykes in the first half and made no contact with the ball. And Sykes got there first. Now, the ref may have thought Sykes' touch took him too far and the ball was back with the goalkeeper anyway. So it didn't actually make any difference, but the bloke wiped him out. And I think Cameron Pring may, I've watched the highlights and you can't quite see, but he may have caught their centre back. But I think he seemed to try and stay on his feet, which would make me think that it wasn't a penalty. But, you know, if you give one, you give the other. And then it could have been 2-1 instead of 1-0.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought the referee did okay.
Yeah. Mark, Max gave a hint of what was to come. That Alex Pritchard, who plays in midfield for them, I thought he had a touch of the Barry Bannon about him. Yeah. That first chance Max had saved from defender Hume early on, but he did a spectacular tip over from one of Pritchard's corners, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And then there was at the end of the first half, there was the free kick as well, wasn't there? That hit the top of the bar.
Yes, it did.
I mean, going back to what Ian said about, I think it was Dan Ballard tried to get a penalty in the second half. I think he went down in stages. I don't think there was really any contact there. But I think Ballard took Sykes out, definitely. I can't understand why that wasn't a penalty. And then there was one in the second half, I think, when Sykes, might have been Ballard again, went into him on the corner of the area. Now, if there's contact, is contact. If you knock a player off the ball, what do we do now? Rate it? You know, gold, silver and bronze contact? You know,
I think the other thing,
ridiculous,
Mark,
isn't it?
Yeah, I think the other thing, Mark, if this was a Premier League game, you know, and if we have VAR at this level next season, there's three or four incidents that would have gone to VAR straight away, and some you win, some you lose. I mean, let's come on to our penalty, Neil, and I'll get all of you to give your view. Sunderland, everybody said Sunderland were knocking the ball around well. Very impressive. It was an entertaining game of football for a 1-0 win overall. But they got themselves into a little bit of a bit of a mess. And TGH from Knight's pass burst into the box. Definite penalty in your view?
Yes. And I don't think Patterson's a very, very good keeper. I like Patterson for Sunderland, good keeper. But he didn't argue it.
No.
And I don't think any of their players really
argued it. They cocked up at the back, didn't they?
Basically? They did. I mean, the one thing I'd say about their back line, they've got Luke Nguyen, who isn't really a centre-back for me. He's a bit small. If you had a big physical player up against Luke Nguyen, he would really, really struggle down there. And they've got Ballard. Ballard is a bit of an old-fashioned centre-back. Obviously came from Arsenal, did well at Millwall on loan, and he's, you know, a solid, but you get him turned and his skill set isn't quite there. They're trying to play it out from the back. Knight nicks it in the way that Knight is just an annoying player to play against, and just sort of nicks the thing, and Taylor Garnham goes through, takes a penalty for me. The Sykes one, I thought he was a coming together. From my position in W13, I thought it's one of those that the two players have arrived at the ball at the same time. And the thing about Sykes is in the second half, he did this daft thing after about 70 odd minutes where he's running in and we're on the screen, aren't we? The two like that, and he runs towards the player and looks to bounce off to actually buy it.
Yeah,
and that is Sykes. Sykes, there's something about him that you think, are we ever going to get a penalty with Sykes? The two penalties we've had with James and with Taylor Hickman, we've just nicked the ball, waited for the challenge. With Sykes, Sykes has got this way of running, and then you can tell he's like, I'm going to get a penalty here. I'm going to get a penalty here. And he deliberately almost like runs towards the players when he doesn't. I think in the referee's minds,
yeah,
they look at Sykes as somebody who's actively looking to get the penalty rather than the two penalties we've got from James in the Borough game and yesterday. The player has played the ball in such a way as to elicit the actual penalty itself.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's
a good point.
Sykes looks to get the penalty and actively, and I think the refs know what Sykes is like.
And Tommy tucked it away because that's all good for his confidence. What do you think of his run-up? It was a little bit of a stuttering run and then sent the keeper the wrong way.
Good composure, two good penalties from him.
Yeah.
You know.
Fifth goal of the season.
Top scorer now.
Yeah. Top scorer. Ian, your take on the goal, Tommy's strike. Did Tommy look more on it yesterday from your perspective?
I think a lot of it with Tommy depends on the support he got. Knight is definitely playing a lot further forward. I mean, sometimes we had a two. Sometimes we had Knight and Gardner Hickman. When we had the ball, we were attacking and we were pressing, playing as two tens. So it's this thing that Manning wants to do, this fluid formation where you're playing one formation in possession, another formation out. But I think, look, picking up on some of the comments on here, one from Rob Collins about George Tanner, we were told when he came in he was one for the future, and that's quite correct, and he ended up playing, once again, our other major issue at the club, injuries. And if it hadn't been for injuries, this season, McCrory, Neil's right, would have probably been starting it right back, and he's a beast. He's a big fella. But he can also play right centre-back. He can also play holding midfield. And he's got a hell of a shot on him. And for Aberdeen last season, he also played right-back, right-wing-back, so centre-midfield and centre-half. So it's having players that are handy to play in those positions. And at the start of the season, Nigel Pearson was asked if he wanted another central defender and declined it because at the time he thought he'd have Atkinson, McCrory, Naismith, Dickey and Viner. That's five.
Yeah.
So he thought, well, whatever happens, I'll be all right. Well, unfortunately, three out of the five have got injured. And when you're playing two, that takes you down to the bare bones.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a squad that Nigel Pearson wanted, and it we never made the allowance for the number of injuries we've got. And it is a major problem. And until we solve that problem one way or the other.
Well, we're talking about how we solve the problem.
Or stop the injuries. Be interesting to see the new medical guy, I reckon, will be in post from January the 1st.
Be interesting to see who it is.
The top guy, the one who's replacing Rennie.
Yeah, Matthew Seward said we have to look at another two quality midfielders. Well, we're talking about transfers at the end. Mark,
could I just mention the goal?
Yeah, I know. I'm going to come to you. I'm going to come to you on the goal. We don't get any penalties. We've seen more blatant decisions go against us for the last couple of years. And it's a bit like buses, none, and then two come along at once. And I think somebody put on one of the social media platforms, was Nigel not a popular manager with referees and therefore they're thinking? It was a bit like Neil was saying about, Sykes. Do referees really think in that level of detail about a player who's playing for penalties? I mean, Alex Scott knew how to buy a foul as well. But, we've suddenly got two penalties in the space of about 4 weeks, Mark, and tuck them both away. Have our fortunes turned? And as I say, talk about a goal and Tommy's finish.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't do. Managers, certainly not. Players, maybe, if referees but it will cloud their judgment. Really, they should do it based on the game, not based on what a player's done. They should just look at the action in real time. The reason we get that penalty is because we press. So you're only gonna win penalties if you take a lot of touches in your opponent's area. Tommy closes down the keeper, and he'd done it before, I think a minute or so earlier. So he closes down the keeper. Dawson tries to play left foot fat pass into Neil, the central midfielder, because Huggins is out of the picture. The right back is up the pitch. Nine is actually in the right back position, further over. But then Knight is just flying in. So he gets a goal side of him to make a tackle. He actually wins a tackle. But then Garner Hickman actually comes in behind him to take the loose ball. So going back to what Ian says, God, I said that about five times now. If you haven't got those two attacking central midfielders, then it doesn't happen. It only happens because Garner Hickman picks up the ball, the loose ball from Knight's tackle. And then he's in. Then the keeper just makes a touch. There's players behind him. He's not the last man. There's two or three Sunderland defenders behind Dawson. He's right on the edge of the 18-yard box. But it's a penalty. The only reason, the way you get penalties is if you actually get defenders or keepers to commit a challenge. We don't do that enough. That's why we don't get penalties. But it was a great penalty. He conned the keeper, moved his head slightly, looking one side and put it in the other side. No. Great penalty.
No, it was good. And Neil, I thought, if you're talking the period immediately after the goal, if we talk about front foot fast attacking football, I thought we played some pretty decent stuff. We've already gone into the Mometi shot that hit the post. You had an interesting observation about how Mometi was being coached on the Lansdowne side. But it was also a situation which I thought was great. And again, Taylor Gardner-Hickman, all this before half-time, Dickey, good through ball, Taylor Gardner-Hickman, run and shot, Patterson springing to his left to parry it away. We could have been 2-0 up, but you were close to the touchline. Tell the guys and the listeners what Manning was doing with the Mometi. Micromanagement was the word you used.
So normally I'm up in E32, row 32, which is a very different experience from W13, row 9, because obviously my eldest son's had his ankle operation, so he's in the boot and all the rest of it. So we just swapped seats for the last couple of games. Very different experience, visual experience, very close to the pitch. You see a lot of things that obviously you're not going to see from row 32 of the Dolman. Mometi doesn't really know quite what he's doing. Defensively, inner shape in particular, and Manning was there with him, basically micromanaging him through that first half. Right, this is what you do here, talking to him. Maybe Pearson didn't do that. Maybe Pearson's expectations of Mometi was you go onto the pitch, this is how I want you to play, fill your boots,
But there's other two coaches as well, Neil. I mean, Curtis Fleming and Jason Yule, they should be doing that.
But maybe the perspective is like, we're not going to micromanage players. We're going to have expectations that they're going to be able to take on board what we want and actually do it on the pitch. But Manning yesterday, he was, Anis, do this, Anis, do that, Anis, do this, Anis, do that. And then I said to you, be interesting second half when he's over on the Dolman side and he hasn't got that in his ear.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was anywhere near as effective the second half when he doesn't have the person there telling him exactly what to do. And I think Manning in his after-match presser said, well, Anis, yeah, we're still having to work a lot. And actually he's obviously extremely raw, put it that way. The player, the maverick that we bought in January with expectations. Going forward, he does add a dimension at times, like what he did with the shot that came off the post that Ian was talking about.
Yeah.
Defensively, he's a bit of a liability.
No, you're right.
I think he did defensively, probably because of the coaching in the first half. What he was doing is he was actually coming inside and tidying up. He did make some tackles, which I thought was amazing because normally he gets what happens is he was under Pearson, he was stuck to the side. He was on the side, and once he was the wrong side of the defender, and he just got dragged along. He just can't recover the ball very well, but he came inside and made a few blocks. He was blocking the passing lanes in the first half, which was good, I thought. So there's something there. He'll get better.
Ian, you wanted to make a point. I was coming to you next anyway. Go on.
If you're going to bring a maverick in, which is how Nigel Pearson described him or described what he wanted before he signed in. And if you play wingers on the basis of how well they can defend, you've got it wrong. Because you've got... Did you notice Roberts and Clark doing a huge amount of defending? Because I didn't.
No.
So your wingers have got to affect the game going that way and in the final third. That's what I want to see the wingers. I want to see them getting goals and assists and crossing the ball. And one of the major problems, we were talking about George Tanner. George Tanner is as good a crosser of the ball as anybody we got this season. And I'm including Campering, Sam Bell, Sykes, Mometi. Because our crossing is dreadful at times. The times we hit the first defender or don't pull it back to the player properly is poor.
It was 7% accuracy yesterday, according to Scott, yesterday.
Sorry?
It was about 7% accuracy yesterday, crossing, going to score.
7%? Well, that tells you everything you want to know. You're not going to score a ton of goals if you can't cross the ball in English football, well, in any football. So Robert Collins said, Mometi is Manning's Casey Palmer, disgust. No, but he does need coaching. And there's a world of difference between what was happening under Nigel Pearson up at the HPC and what's happening under Liam Manning and Chris Ogg. And it's a world of difference in terms of preparation, coaching sessions, videos, telling people how they want to play. And he's trying to take a bit of a silk purse, turn it into a silk purse. Because if you look at the games, the seven games that they said that they finally decided that Nigel was moving on, the two we won were two of the luckiest wins you'll ever see. Rotherham away, when Tommy came on, played out of his skin for about 10 minutes and was man of the match. That's how good that game was.
And Coventry at home. Yeah.
Coventry at home, when we could have easily been four down at half time.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
So, and we cocked up the formation. But no, I think as you play further forward, and one of the things I said when Manning came in is, if he can get a tune out of Anis Mometi, we've got a player. Now, I'm still not 100% convinced with Mometi, but I think there's something in there. And obviously Manning thinks there's something in there because they gave him a go yesterday. But let's not get to this point where we're picking. Because if you want players that can defend on that side, you wait till Hayden Roberts is fit and you play him in front of Cam Pring.
Yeah, because or even vice versa.
Well, I would still leave Pring at fullback because he has got a bit of height back there, and he's quite effective when the ball is accurately played to him when he goes out on that left side, flicking it on for Mometi or into Tommy. And until we get a taller striker, which my understanding is that we'll be looking for a striker and a creative midfielder in January, we've got to get around it, if you want to call it that, playing that kind of way. But no, let's not saying, well, you know, Mometi's not that great defensively. I want him to get goals and get assists. Now, yeah. If he's not I'll criticise him all day.
Yeah, we want him in the final third of the pitch.
The one point I make about Mometi and Manning is that I think Manning's gone on record saying that if he was staying at Oxford, it was pretty much agreed that he was having Mometi on loan.
Is that right?
In January. So he knew about Mometi before he came to the club.
All right.
He was going to have him at Oxford on loan. And that was agreed that the club was going to loan him out. So he thinks highly of Mometi, I think. And he's willing to put the time and the effort in.
And that's what it is about putting the time and the effort in. Let's get into the second half. And, yeah, not masses of incidents in there other than two super saves from Max. And it was one-way traffic. I read the Sunderland manager, but he's caretaker manager. Beale wasn't in the box yesterday, by the way, watching the game. But he said Bristol didn't get out of their half until the 70th minute. And I think he was absolutely true there. Neil, we made two substitutions. One substitution, two players coming on the 70th minute. Williams for James and Vyman for Mometi. Were you happy with that and timing of the substitutions?
Yeah, James didn't. The way that they were passing the ball, I don't think James had the best game. But then James sort of stops those lines in the middle of the park.
He can hang back, and that's allowing Knight and TGH to do those.
Yeah, so he's a guy for shutting down the channels when the ball's coming down the middle. They were spreading it wide, and as such, you know, he was used as a block for when Clark was cutting in or Roberts was cutting in. But because they moved the ball out wide so much, he wasn't as effective, I think, James, as he usually is in that sort of thing. So I wasn't surprised for him to go off. And Williams is the obvious
one to
send out the rampager type thing and try and get a grip, which he does after 30 seconds. But Vyman again, I mean...
I didn't see a single contribution.
I turned to Thomas after about 80 minutes and I said, just to double check, Vyman is on the pitch at the moment, isn't he? Or something like that.
I think he was fouled, wasn't he, in the last 20 minutes? He did make some good blocks. Defensively, he wasn't bad.
I can't remember thing he did.
I mean, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Sorry, it's my dog. And some of the noises during this broadcast, we've got Eddie the Labrador's been walking in and out in here. He's just doing his good guide dog bit at the moment. Let's go talk about Max's two saves in the second half. You first, Mark. Save number one. I mean, some goalkeeper like Alisson does them, one of the Premier League goalkeepers. You know, they'll be showing them over and over again. But the first one from an 09 header, second one from a Bellingham header. I mean, he silences critics. There are critics. I'm not saying we criticise him, Ian. I don't want to get your wrath for saying something that you didn't say. But Mark, those two saves, top draw. And overall yesterday, I thought he was okay in every respect.
Yeah, I think I think he's getting better on crosses. His distribution still, you know, it's still a bit lacking. Some of his kicking from feet and from hands isn't the best, but that will improve. But yeah, the first one, 09, it actually bounces up into him to 09. The ball hits the floor. 09 crouches down and heads it, and it's actually behind Max. So he gets one hind. It actually went to goal line technology. The ball was resting on the line, so he got his hand to it, and I think Garner Hickman's just behind him. Tucked inside. Whether he would have got it if it had gone any further, well, it couldn't have gone much further, could it? Because it would have been over the line. But it's a fantastic save. The second one from Bellingham, he's actually heading it down. Now it's near it. It's a little bit central, which favours him. But again, he gets a good strong hand to it and pushes it wide. You know, he doesn't push it back into play. He pushes it wide. Top saves in a pressure situation. So, you know, we have to thank him.
Kept us in it.
But that's what you do. I mean, people say we were lucky. We didn't. We won the game because we were great in defence. Yeah. You make your own luck. I think there's one of the golfers said, the more I practice, the luckier I get, you know, the harder I work. People say the luckier I get. So it was down to hard work, great defending and good goalkeeping from Max O'Leary.
I mean, it's like the Norwich game. We should have won that. You know, you can put a spin on it whichever way, you know, and yesterday Sunderland will feel disappointed just like we did. So we can't take the negative aspect. We were lucky, you know.
Yeah,
we kept them out, you know. And I thought about that when I was woke up this morning. I was thinking,
it's a flippant thing said by football fans, isn't it? You mean you look at the stats? Were lucky today. You got away with one today. Well, we won a penalty. You look at how we won that penalty. That was from good attacking play. Yeah. And for all of Sunderland's possession, they didn't have a cutting edge at all. No. And that's going to be their problem going forward.
It is.
We're a work in progress. The top six tag, people are still using that flippantly because John Lansdowne said it. It's a load of absolute cobblers. We're a work in progress. We're going backwards to go forwards at the moment, but I think we can go forward.
No, I agree.
It'll need two or three additions, wouldn't it, to make us a better side?
Well, we'll talk about those additions in a moment. And if they'd have had Ellis Sims, who was there in their starting lineup at the opening game.
Well, Coventry got him, haven't they? And he's not doing so well.
It just shows that. Ian, the goal, I mean, it was interesting. First half, Pritchard had put in a corner that Max had tipped it over. And then both both the saves came from indirectly. Pritchard corners, one on the Lansdowne side, one on the Dolman side. I mean, when he plays like that, you don't have to think about whether we get somebody to compete for the number one spot, or do you? And your comment on the two saves.
Well, the two saves were absolutely excellent, particularly the one that Mark highlighted earlier on about it went to the goal line review system, because that ball was half over the line when he clawed it away. So that was a tremendous save. Max is, I think Max is a good keeper. Is his distribution always what it should be? No. But we can't all be like the Man City guy. And you're talking about a 35, 40 million pound goalkeeper there. So, but I think Max is, you know, I look at their defence and their goalkeeper, and I wouldn't swap their defence and their goalkeeper for our defence and our goalkeeper.
Yeah, so I agree.
You know, it's that. I wouldn't be, well, in terms of looking to strengthen that area of the field, if we can get the players fit, we may not need to. But my question overall is, can we keep them fit? And that's just a massive problem. I'm sorry to keep going back to it, but if you're going to have a small squad, they've got to stay fit. I just deal with Bob Taylor's got a world of difference. Please tell us more, Mr. Gay. Have you been at the HPC daily? No, but I talk to highly intelligent people who have, unlike you, who are a bit sarky, mate, if you don't mind me saying.
Just because I shared with him the fact.
Let's not do that. Mark, you be quiet. Saying is there. It's night and day, right? You look at the way Hodge and Manning are doing things. Totally different, and you'll see it reflected in the players. And if those players ain't good enough, then I'm sure between January and the summer they'll be gone.
All right, okay, Neil, your shout. I wanted to ask you something as well.
Just nothing. Right. Son's got some friends who are in the under-18s and under-21s. They talk about the pitches up at the HPC now, the training pitches, not the main pitch, the training pitches. He's painted arrows on them. There are arrows all over the pitch to show the movement and to show where players should be running. And it's bizarre. Manning got asked it in a press interview oh, well, you've got all these lines on the pitch. What are all they for? What are they for? And he went, oh, I can't sort it.
Well, look, so,
but then with it, obviously, after the Blackburn game,
yeah,
he made the comment, maybe there's been too much information with the players.
Maybe we've
overloaded them.
The thing to do is, I haven't got a drone, but anybody who's listening, get up to Ashton, get up to Fayland and take a drone up this afternoon and send us some pictures. Changing the subject. And, you know, we have this, what is it, Project White Beam, yeah? And we were talking about what the traveller rate, you know, we're a green club, almost like the Lord Mayor of Bristol being highlighted in a certain media for his trips all over the world. We're a green club, but we did fly up to Huddersfield on Blackburn on Tuesday. We flew up to Liverpool and then the players rested in the afternoon and there was a little private jet to bring them back afterwards. So, you know,
well, they flew on sustainable fuel cooking oil rather than the regular fuel.
I thought they should have stayed away, but that's by the by. Let's just wrap the game up. Neil, you WhatsApped me, I mean, about an incident that, who is it? Josh Jones has said as well. Before we talk about that incident, Taylor Gardner-Hickman, yeah, we got to sign him, have we? Maybe. Another good run and shot that was saved in the second half. But Josh Jones has said on the text feed here, Cornick doing his best Baz Savage impression against Yeovil. God, how far they've fallen. Has to be the comical. Tell us about that with Cornick.
Well, he does very well. He's released pass. He's in. He's behind Nien. Awful touch. And he
touched the bloke. The bloke touched him and he sort of just slid in. And that was nothing.
I think it was a touch that took the ball away from him and then that's why he slid in. I don't think anybody ever thought it was a foul by Nien. It reminds me a little bit of last year, Jerry Yates. When he went through the middle and actually that was putting a little bit of a... The referee missed. But, you know... That wasn't great by Cornick, was it?
And
that
the could pass have been by the pass by Knight Neil was terrific.
Not to get a shot off there, really.
If I ever wake up in the morning feeling fine because I got Harry Cornick on my mind, you got my permission to shoot me.
Yeah,
I've had Phil Oakey on the phone moaning about the Tommy Conway song. He can't stand it, you know. Tommy Conway, baby.
Don't you want me? But oh god, yeah.
Tommy Conway, baby. My god, the Human League. Going back to that incident with Cornick, the ball from Knight, because he wins the ball in the right back position and it's behind him. He plays it across, you know, from right to left. Absolutely terrific ball. But it was like he was celebrating the penalty, he was celebrating a goal, skidding on his knees. I mean, it was a bit embarrassing. I'm just, you know, you're just so embarrassed by that. Try and get a shot away or do something. You know, of course, it's in front of Section 82. So Section 82 immediately think penalty, don't they? I'm just embarrassed. Were you embarrassed? Right. I was.
Well, no, it was just disappointing because that's a game out of sight. And you remember his very first game for us, Cornick, he had that breakthrough. And if he'd have took that one away and said he blasted it, but at least he got a shot away that time. All right, let's look forward to Friday against Hull City. Ian, managed by a former player who should never have left the club were it not for an admin error, Liam Rosinha. They gave Cardiff a 3-0 lead in. They're another top six side coming into the game. What can we expect? I see Scott Twine scored for them yesterday, a player who Liam Manning had at MK Dons and who was sold, maybe leading to MK Dons' demise and his sacking. But what can we expect against Hull? Another challenging game, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, Hull are, if you look at the form table at the moment, they're eighth. So their last six games, they've played played six, won three, drew one and lost two. They score goals because they've scored 12 goals, but they also concede. So I'm seeing them a little bit like Middlesbrough, who score goals, but let quite a few in. Going into their... away form. their away form. I'm trying to find them on that list, and they're 10th in that. So their last, yeah, they are a side that anything could happen, to be quite honest. They've their last six away games, they've won two, drew two, lost two, scored nine in letting 10. So I think once again, if you look at the two teams, it's gonna be a very open attacking game. Somebody asked me, I was talking to somebody in Newcastle during the week, and they asked me how I thought we'd do against Sunderland. So you got to beat them. I said, mate, I honestly don't know what to expect when I go down to Ashton Gate. I the only thing I will tell you, it probably won't be goalless. But I mean, we could win 3-0, we could lose 3-0, it could be a draw. And at the moment, our home form is, well, at the moment, our last six at home, we've won four and lost two. And we're still not scoring enough goals because we've only scored seven. But then again, we've only conceded five at home. Yeah. So it looks like it's going to be a really entertaining game. But they got one brilliant goal from the free kick. That was Twines. And the other two were more or less, well, one was a cross following a long ball down the middle, and the other was a pass, a long pass down the middle, which the guy took well and lobbed the keeper. So, but Cardiff aren't in great form at the moment. So hopefully, with the fact that our defence is better, we can keep them out and perhaps win a higher scoring game. That would be my hope.
Well, that'd be very nice. Mark, I mean, it would be a good psychological boost to beat Hull, wouldn't it? Because if you look at the table, they're sat nestled there in fifth. I mean, there's a 6-point gap between them and Southampton in fourth. My view is that there's about 10 clubs, of which we're one, thankfully, as a result of winning yesterday. There are 10 clubs making a play for the two final slots in the playoff positions. Yeah. If we beat Hull, we go up to 32 points. We're 4 points off. That's a good place to be going into the Christmas period, and it marks the halfway point of the season as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've got everybody's got aspirations to the playoffs, but I haven't even got any fault to that, because I think with our recent form, we were looking over our shoulders maybe a little bit. I don't think we were ever going to be in danger of being in a relegation fight if we'd have lost yesterday, but it would have got the fans really worrying. So I think at the halfway stage, if we can be on 32 points, that's great. And then it's going to be signings in January, players returning like Rob Atkinson, Naki Wells, Cal Naismith, maybe February, March, April, I don't know, May. He'll get a few games.
Everybody but Eamon should be back by, I think, Eamon, not sure, Hayden Roberts towards the end of January, and all the others injured mid-January.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Atkinson's going to give, when he's fully fit, is going to give Manning a headache, because he wants to play with two centre backs at the moment. So at the moment, that's Viner and Atkinson. Viner and Dickey. So that's a very good problem for him to have.
You play any two from three, because I'm just not. On a personal level, I'm just not keen on Naismith being back there. But then, you know, he's turning out to be a little bit of a sick note. Neil, just to wrap up on the looking forward to Hull, that would be good. Halfway point, 32 points, that would be.
Well, Hull themselves are a good team. They are a good team.
Well, they've beaten Leicester and Middlesbrough away, haven't they, this season?
Tufan, I really like Tufan for them. He's a fantastic Turkish player there that they've recruited. They've bought Delap, Twine, Tyler Morton, all in on loan, all starting, all performing. Tyler Morton was obviously at Blackburn last year and was a standout player when he was on loan. He's on loan from Liverpool, standout player for Blackburn last season. Twine, he's always looked at playing. He got injured when he went to Burnley, but we thought he might actually stand up. But he's a fantastic player in the lower divisions. Delap, he's not going to make it at Man City, but he's a physical presence. He obviously scored against us, I think, start of the season, didn't he, in the away game?
Yeah.
I think Delap sort of scored type of player, physical sort of tall player who's going to cause us problems. I think it's arguably a harder game than the Sunderland and Middlesbrough game, okay. actually going into it. The one thing I'd say about Hull is the two centre-backs. I think they've got a geezer that was from Long Ashton. Greaves, is it?
Greaves, yeah.
Jacob Greaves, or is it Alfie Jones? One of them's from Long Ashton, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a local lad who went down to Southampton. Didn't go through our academy, went through Southampton. It's either Alfie Jones or Jacob Greaves. The two centre-backs aren't great for me. From when we've played them a few years ago, I don't think they've actually recruited and improved in the centre-back position. So I think there's some opportunities there. They've got Cyrus Christie, who's getting on a bit at left-back and a right-back. He's a right-back. Louis Cole. No idea who you are, mate, but there we go.
He's
been at Hull for a number of years. Defensively, you know, that last game of the season we played him before when we won 5-0, I don't think they've actually recruited defensively. What they've done is they've recruited offensively. And I think they've done well.
Yeah.
And they are perhaps going to get in the playoff. I
always want to beat Hull because of what they did to us in 2008. So I think we're all speaking as one.
Yeah.
Ian's thinking that it could be a high scoring encounter. It'd be nice if it is going into Christmas. Be interesting to see what the crowd is on a Friday night. I don't think there'll be too many people making the journey down from Humberside to watch it. But let's just spend 5 minutes or so before we wrap up talking about the transfer window. And you first, Ian. Everybody's coming back into fitness, which is good. So we're going to get to see, in theory, the side that Nigel might have wanted to have played. Yeah. But equally, Liam will want to make some tweaks. There's the loan market possibility, and it's less than 2 weeks now, barely 2 weeks, before the window opens. When we sign players, they've always got to be better than what we've got. Yeah. Okay. So somebody like George Tanner, we said when he was signed 2 years ago, he's one for the future, but clearly he's been one for the present. If we get on a run, Ian, like we get a draw at Watford, we beat Birmingham away, and on New Year's Day we beat Millwall. Assuming we beat Hull, that 4-point gap between us and the playoffs will narrow if we put together a bit of form. It's a bit of a conundrum, really. Do you stick with what you've got? Do you twist? Do you go into the loan market and get in quality loan players? And if so, where? What areas of the pitch do you strengthen? So what's your take on the month of January and the window?
My understanding is we'll do business. The preference is the same as it was in the summer, and that's to sign. We'll be signing players from League One, League Two, Scotland. The other area that we'll look at are players that are going to be out of contract. So I hate to say it, but, you know, a similar situation to Harry Cornick, where you've got a player who's currently playing in the Championship. He's going to be out of contract in the summer. So the club may not want to sell him, but they will want to cash in and get some money rather than no money. If we can't get permanent signings, we'll get loans, and we'll be looking for players in the top half of the pitch. Now, this is all barring accidents and further injuries, because the problem is you can bet your life if we get 4 or 5 back, it won't be too long before we've got 4 or 5 out, because that's been the way of the world for the last 4 years. So I can't see it stopping that much. Although the new fitness coaches and the new head of medical will have a significant impact on that. And if they won't have a significant impact, we shouldn't have made any changes in that department. But if we can't get Perms are the preference. There's money there to do it. Perms are the preference. But if we can't get perms, we'll look at loans. But some of the money that's being quoted for loans, because the Premier League clubs see it as a good financial generator. And if I tell you that young lads who've never kicked a ball in the Championship are available at £25,000 a week, that's the kind of market that you're in.
Mm.
If you want Premier League loans.
Okay.
And some of the players, some of the information that I found out through exceptional sources, is it, for example, Scott is on 12 times as much as he was down the City Ground at Bournemouth.
Yeah. Because he didn't sign it.
When people say, well, we should have kept him, and we should have done this, and we should have done that, can you blame the kid for going there? Do you think someone's going to, you know, if you were offered, somebody comes to you and offers you 12 times your salary, that's the market.
No, that's a big money. I think the thing is, I'll be surprised if we don't. Scott's youth contract, the contract that he signed when he broke into the side at 17, would have been probably £4,000 a week tops. Yeah?
Three grand.
To go from £3,000 to £36,000, City may well have offered him a contract at, I don't know, if our max wage is £12,000 a week, so he may have offered him £12,000 a week. He's still going to go for 36, very much like Adam Webster went to Brighton.
Not forgetting the point, Dave. If you're a professional, you want to apply your trade at the highest level.
Of course you do, which is why, and it's not a case of us.
And if you want to play in the Premier League, this ain't the club. The only way, and even then, we might not be able to hold on to our better players or our best players. The only way is if we get promoted, and as Norwich showed with Buendia, they got promoted, had a tremendous season. Villa come in the summer and say to Delia, right, we'll give you 42
million.
That's going to
happen. You're a selling club in those circumstances, yeah.
Well, every club in the country is a selling club in certain circumstances. I mean, Man City sell players.
Yeah.
And that's one thing they've done well. Right. That when a player is, you know, might not be getting in the side a lot or slightly. I mean, they sold players like Sterling. He was a good player for Man City.
Yeah.
They still flogged him because he fancied a move back to London.
He did. And they're not having the best of form. Mark, your comment, I need to wrap up in a moment in total.
Yeah, would in those circumstances, and knowing that we blood lots of young players, would a Premier League club be prepared to subsidise similar wages? Because they do it in some circumstances, don't they? I don't know if they have done.
But then you're in the question as well as to who do you leave out of the starting lineup? Even with this slightly depleted squad, to get better.
The bigger question is will the kid that you sign on, let's say you go, Steve Lansdowne says, or John Lansdowne now says, right, yeah, go and get him. So he says to Brian Tynion, yeah, you go and get Ronnie Jones at Chelsea on £25,000 a week. You don't know if he's any good in the Championship.
No. Well, we didn't know if Sammy Abraham was going to be any good. All right.
That's the chance. What I'm saying is that's the chance you take. And we live in post-COVID rather than pre-COVID times. And the world's a different place financially unless you're in the Premier League.
Right. Yeah, the risk is greater. That's what we're talking about. And much greater exactly financial that. Risk.
All right, Neil.
These clubs are shitting themselves. Yeah.
There's a real difficulty in January getting the players in, full stop. Even if you're talking about, right, okay, we're in the market, we go and we, you know, approach a team and we say we'd love to take this player on loan. Right, it's on £20,000 a week, right? Okay, yeah, well, there's going to be four or five other clubs looking to take that player on loan.
Of course.
So then what happens is you get into a row where you're having to, like, bring them over, sell the club to them and do all these type of things. That takes weeks. You know, if anybody thinks that we're going to be getting in, whether permanent loans, whatever, in the first 2 weeks of the window, I wouldn't say.
Mm.
So I think we're going to go through the majority of January with the squad that we have at the moment. Yes, we'll look to tweak it and bring players in, we can all see after the first seven games where we need to improve if we're going to be playing Manning ball. But the point is, recruitment is a nightmare in January unless you pay stupid money on a permanent, or you're willing to, you know, you go to the Liverpools and Chelsea's and say, I really like that youngster, right? He's 20 grand a week. Well, we'll give 25 just to get him in now. You know, you're either paying over the odds on loan to get in front of the other four teams looking in, or you're overpaying on permanent contracts to bring people in. Either way, you're never going to get value for money.
No.
But Tomlin, we got in. Great for us on that thing. Galvanised us.
Kept us up, and then was a total waste of money. Although we got our money back because we took Cardiff.
The lockdown Hawfield got Elliot Anderson in from Premiership into you know League Two, and he pretty much single-handedly got them promoted because they were going nowhere in League
I'll
Two.
I'll be honest.
So you can find it, but it's not a great time to recruit, and it's not a great time to bring in. There's a certain desperation around trying to recruit. It's a good time if you're in the playoffs, building on what you've already
got. But we could be in that situation if we have a little bit of a run. No, but we're on the
thanks,
fringe.
Thanks, John.
All right.
Yeah.
God, I'm being far too.
We believe in fairies next.
I know what you mean.
If you win it, if you have a run of games, you could be in the playoff position.
I think with the players coming back after injury, and as Ian says, but we could lose a different four. But if I think with the players coming back after injury, right, then anybody that we sign in January has got to be better than what we've already got and can come straight into the team in one of those starting lineups. So maybe after the whole game, we'll talk about who's at risk. I'm going to throw a name out there now because we said about midfielders, and I know he's not an attacking midfielder, but I think Matty James might find that he's part of the matchday squad going forward rather than an ever-present in there. I don't really know. And then the final thing on this is who might go out, as somebody said on here, Matt Seward said on it, be good for Yeboah to go out on
loan. Does
Anis Mehmeti go out on loan? Because if we sign three players, and effectively we've got three players who would be first team starters coming back, we could be six players better off than we are at the moment. But we're talking.
Yeah, but Dave, you've got to allow for injuries moving forward, because don't forget, you can't. It's all right saying, well, we could let Mehmeti go out on loan and we could do this and do that. At the moment, Liam Manning's terrified every time one of our players goes into a tackle, because he's thinking, well, Christ, I could lose another one for 3 months. So
I don't know about him. I'm terrified.
Guys, let's talk about. Let's look forward to. I need to wrap it up.
Well, can I just make a point about where we are, Dave? We're 9 points clear of relegation, which is a decent place. If we can beat Hull, that could go to 12. We're 6 points behind the playoffs. So once again, a win, and it's on a Friday night, could make you look in a much more healthier position.
Let's look
on the bright side.
Yeah. Whatever happens on Friday, you know, we will be, and Hull is the marker. Now, West Brom could overtake Hull. Sunderland could overtake Hull at the weekend, right? But Sunderland are 3 points behind Hull at the moment. We would be, even if Sunderland win at the weekend and we beat Hull, we'd be 4 points behind fifth and sixth place going into the games. And then what a marvellous effort that is nearly 9,000 fans going up for a big day with West Ham in the FA Cup.
Well, we've eulogised about Sunderland and their prowess and their technical skills and all the rest of it. They've picked up 5 points out the last 21 away from home.
Yeah.
So it that's the division we're in. It's not when was the last time? Can anybody tell me the last time we won two games back to back? It must be over 40 games.
It is now. It's now over 40, Ian, because when that stat first appeared, it was that. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. We've had a record live listening audience on YouTube this morning, which is really really good. I'm going to try and do a couple of half season reviews with some people, so people have got some stuff to listen to over Christmas. We passed through 180,000 downloads just the other day in terms of our total listenership since we started 3.5 years ago. That is now, and we'll be back giving our thoughts on the whole game at 9 o'clock on Saturday, and then we'll advise what we're going to do vis-a-vis covering or reporting on Watford, Birmingham, and obviously New Year's Day, Millwall as well. But Neil, who's been sat with me here, thank you, Neil. Ian, who's sat there at the bottom of the screen, thank you, Ian, as always. Mark, as always, everybody, thanks ever so much for listening, and enjoy your week. And most people, a lot of people are finishing. You're probably, you're not finishing. No, I'm not. Christmas holidays start now. So let's all do Merry Christmas glad handing for everybody. There we go. Merry Christmas, everybody, from everyone at Forever Bristol City. I'm doing a piece.
Thanks, Mr. Holder.
As well, by the way. So, yeah, I'll be doing that in the week ahead. I was on Sunderland podcast this week as well. So
What the Folk? That's a great name, wouldn't it?
I know, What the Folk. But no, it's good. It's just a good crack. There's a great podcast community in this division, in every division. So we enjoy doing it. And hopefully you guys all enjoy this. Thanks a lot. All the best to you all. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye. As a king, when the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.